Hi listeners, Jason here. We are excited to finally announce registrations for the biggest psych health and safety community event ever. The inaugural The Psych Health and Safety Conference will be held at the Sofitel Wentworth Sydney, June 19 to 20, 2024, and offer concurrent virtual attendance. It'll feature live podcast recordings with OG researchers, including Christina Maslach and Michael Leiter of Burnout fame, Psych Health and Safety USA podcast host I. David Daniels, Australian super experts, including the likes of David Burrows, a special 10-year anniversary integrated approaches to workplace mental health panel with authors Tony LaMontagna, Angela Martin and Kat Page, handpicked case studies from organisations doing it well, and a very special interview with plaintiff Zagi Kozarov by Catherine Dunlop on that High Court case, which we previously covered on the podcast. This event will sell out. Get in quick to secure tickets at early bird prices for the two-day conference, pre-conference masterclasses, and the VIP dinner. The first 200 in-person registrations also get a copy of her latest book, The Burnout Challenge, signed by Christina Maslach herself. Find out more and register at www.psychhealthandsafetyconference.com. Now, on to this episode.
The concept of total worker health was launched in 2006 by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. Nationally, 10 centers of excellence are designed to be hubs for total worker health-related research and practice. We'll talk with the leader of one of these centers up next on this episode of the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. As workplace mental health has become a global priority, there's a greater focus on addressing psychosocial hazards. Each episode, we look at psychological safety from an occupational health and safety perspective. Let's talk Psych Health and Safety. Welcome to this week's Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. I'm your host, Dr. I. David Daniels, and I want to thank you for tuning in. Each week, we seek to increase awareness of the importance of psychological health and safety by learning from the lived experiences, research, and expertise of our guests, as well as advocating strategies to reduce harm and minimize vulnerability to psychosocial hazards in the American workplace. So the origins of total worker health can be traced back to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services initiative called Steps to a Healthier U.S. In 2014, NIOSH created the Office of Total Worker Health Coordination and Research to coordinate and advance these efforts. The comprehensive nature of total worker health approaches require innovative thinking to design and inform current policies, programs, and practices that advance worker well-being. NIOSH funds 10 academic centers of excellence for total worker health to inspire innovation in the field. One of these centers is located at the Colorado School of Public Health. The school is built on the collective expertise and vision of the faculty of three leading educational and research institutions, the University of Colorado, Colorado State University, and the University of Northern Colorado. The Center for Work, Health, and Environment focuses on research, education, and practice. We're honored to have someone to help us learn more about the center, as well as help deepen our understanding of the work being done around total worker health. So let's start with an introduction of our guest, by our guest, with this question. Who is Dr. Lily Tenney?
Hi. Thanks for having me, David. I really appreciate it. My name's Lily Tenney. I co-direct our Center for Health, Work, and Environment, as you so eloquently described in your introduction. We are one of 10 centers of excellence for total worker health. My role has been in working with this evolving center for the last 12 years in a variety of capacities. My passion has been in public health and the intersection of public health and business. And so my role within the center is to lead our research and our education and training programs, as well as our outreach portfolio and working with partners to design and implement interventions in partnership, mostly with employers. So I have the opportunity to work with just a tremendous team and our fearless leader, Dr. Lee Newman, who founded the center over 15 years ago as part of the Colorado School of Public Health. We're also a NIOSH-funded mountain and plain research and education center. So we have graduate and postgraduate training programs in occupational safety and health as well. So all of that really has culminated into my career in becoming a total worker health professional. I like to call myself somewhat of an odd duck in the world of academia because of how my brain works. In my background is actually in business. So I studied marketing before coming into the field of being introduced to the field of occupational environmental health. So I have a really diverse background, and I think it's challenged me to think of ways that we can really apply and approach total worker health in practice. So thanks for having me today. I'm excited about this.
Sure, sure. Again, thanks for accepting the invitation to chat with me for a while. Another standard question that I ask everyone who comes on the podcast is, when you hear psychological health and safety, what does that mean to you?
The first thing I think about is being able to feel safe in your space, and whether that's in your head psychological capacity, in your surroundings, in your workplace, in a workplace setting, in an interpersonal setting. It means to me so many different things. And at the heart of it, it means that you as a person, as an individual, feel safe and in tune with your surroundings. And I think I am not a psych expert by any means, but psychosocial factors are essential to what we do in total worker health. And it has become a really pretty much the primary area of interest among the partners that we are working with today.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So, again, this is going to be great because I see organizations like the one you're connected to as a part of the solution to addressing the lack of focus on psychosocial hazards in the United States. You are probably aware that we're a little behind in that area. The fact that we still see physical health as one thing and psychological health as another, and again, as a system, not a dig at anyone specifically, but as a system, we haven't really made the connection as well as about 30 other countries around the world have. And in order to do that, we need information, because people aren't just going to start doing this stuff because a couple of people get on a podcast and talk. they actually need, many of them are going to need more than that. And I think organizations and folks with your background and focus can help. So again, let's talk a little, tell me a little bit more about the Center for Health, Work, and Environment, because that sounds like a lot of things that are really connected. But to be quite honest, I believe in the public health view that public health is kind of everywhere in everything. It is difficult to separate public health from most of what we do. So how does the center, so tell me a little bit more specifically about it, and for someone who's never heard of it before, talk a little bit about the center.
Sounds good. And it's true, right? It's a blessing and a curse that public health is everything. What we consider total worker health also shares that commonality in being so many things, depending on who you're talking to and what their goals are, what their perspectives are on it. So our center, and I'm going to speak specifically to the total worker health part of what our center does. So the Center for Health, Work, and Environment is this umbrella center, academic center, as you said, based at the Colorado School of Public Health. We're part of the University of Colorado, Denver. And the center has faculty and staff that specialize in very diverse expertise, including industrial hygiene, occupational medicine, toxicology, occupational epidemiology, public health, community behavioral health, biostats. And our group has come together to form this center to be able to really conduct innovative and opportunistic research projects, most of which are community-based, all of which are focused on our mission to improve the health, safety, and well-being of all workers. And we're really focused on the inclusive nature of what we consider when we go about designing and pursuing any research opportunities. So that's really our research focus. And I'll get into some of the research that we've done over the last 10 years and what we're focused on now that I think touches to psychological safety. The other pillar that you described is our education and training core. And that work is focused on training professionals across what you would consider our environmental health and safety, occupational safety and health professionals for enhancing their skills and knowledge in the field. And what we've been doing with our total worker health training is we've had a goal of enhancing what the existing practices, and that can be a technical industrial hygienist. It could be someone who is working for a local public health agency, doing occupational health surveillance. We do training across the board on a range of different topics, and our total worker health trainings also expand to non-occupational safety and health professionals. And these can be human resource managers, business owners, public health professionals, health educators on total worker health. And the goal of that is for us to really build capacity for worker health and safety in practice, realizing that not every business, not even every community has access to the occupational safety and health expert. So how can we start really training others to have an influence in this space? And then the third pillar of our center is our outreach core, our practice. And a lot of different things fit in that bucket. Usually if it's like not a funded research project, it's like, oh, just throw it into practice and outreach. But this is where we focus on dissemination. So translating and disseminating science to make a compelling case for caring about workers and the business case. What do the numbers look like? What's the value proposition for investing in worker health? It focuses on implementation. And that's where my heart is coming up with the solutions for improving worker health and well-being, safety. And then it also focuses on a lot of the partnerships and the power of partnerships and bringing our center's value into professional associations, local government agencies, and regional groups. We've worked with tribal communities to do a lot of training, education, and programming in both urban, rural, and regional communities that we work with. So we do a lot, but at the end of the day, everything we do is really connected back to that mission of improving the health, safety, and well-being of workers. And I agree with you that, we we fall short in so many ways. And I've been able to learn so much about just my interests and the general interests and why that could be and what it is and where the opportunities are for us to really, I think, enhance in a very practical way how to advance where we are in those areas. So,
right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's come up a couple of times. You've mentioned the focus of the work that you all do being community-based. And I find that really, really exciting and heartening, particularly for someone with a business background. And I'll share with you why. It's my observation that back in the day, Robert Taylor came up with the, kind of scientific management concept, and folks really got into that. And conversations about efficiency and, that. So in most, if not all, business schools, that gets talked about, and worker health and safety doesn't necessarily come up as often. As opposed to about the same time, Robert Taylor had someone as a contemporary. Her name was Mary Parker Follett, and folks weren't listening to her as much. It might be because she was a girl. I don't know. that thing that we have about boys and girls in this country or in our society as a whole, we have tended to listen to the male voices, and the female voices didn't get as much credence. But she talked about, again, around the same time in history, about the importance of getting human beings together who could do great things and work together. And that voice kind of got drowned out. And now, 100 or so years later, we're starting to figure out that you're not going to get one without the other. You're not going to get, great businesses that continue to produce wonderful products and services and have great relationships with other people when they haven't focused on the human beings that are involved. So I say all that to say, so how does a person who is trained in business end up so interested in the community connection? How'd you get there?
Well, I'll tell you the story. So about the time I went to college was when we saw your traditional, I went to business school and they're like, pick a major. And I, the choices were finance, accounting, marketing, or management. And that was it. And you would see some things sprinkled in there. It was starting to be discussed about, okay, we're going to teach you not just how to run a business, how to manage a business, how to start a business, how to finance a business, but we're also going to start talking about things like corporate social responsibility. What could businesses be doing to be better citizens across environment, governance, social well-being? And that hooked me a lot. I think just by the nature of wanting to have more purpose in what I do. And it was still very new. Like business, now you go to business school, you can major in anything from not just corporate social responsibility, but like corporate social responsibility for manufacturing, whatever sector you want to. And so from that, I came out of business school and I was very interested in the communication and marketing of how businesses could have a greater impact. And at the time, I was really passionate about the environmental side and how, what businesses were doing to reduce their carbon footprint. How were they producing? Where were they producing? And slowly but surely, I started learning more about that community impact, where textiles were being produced and how different businesses were starting to establish what we call B Corp today, right? Where it was based on a business model of consuming for their consumers, where the business would create a model in which for all their profits, they were going to do a match to the communities in which they were producing. And so I could see that there was an interest among the business community in the United States, but also globally, about selling corporate goodness. And the part I really hated was that companies were also taking advantage of this, right? And they say they're doing all of these wonderful things, but what's really happening behind the scenes? And that is what made me go to graduate school for public health and start to really engage in community and behavioral health and epidemiology, and then eventually environmental and occupational health, because I was so convinced that I wanted nothing to do with healthcare. Like, all I wanted to do was to keep people out of hospitals, because and I didn't care about even the healthcare spending piece of it. I just wanted people to be able to live really good lives. And I think I instantly saw a gap in my public health training of this notion that you design, that what I was trained was like the role the community plays is very important, but businesses weren't even considered part of that community, right? It was like the healthcare system, nonprofits, different coalitions, community health workers. And we were at the time working with a workers' compensation insurer, and they were saying to us, they contracted with us to do a research project called their health risk management study. And they were going, there's interest among our policyholders. Like, they're wanting to do more than just compliance, right? Like, check the box on all the must-haves. They're starting to ask us questions about like how mental health is impacting work-related injuries, how they have workers coming to on the job every day that are tired and fatigued. We live in Colorado, right? We have work with a lot of ski industries where they have a seasonal workforce. So all of this started to unfold. And that's where the business practice of environmental, social, responsible governance and people, right? The actual people who make up organizations started to take shape and presented this opportunity for us at the center to start a new program in partnership with this workers' comp insurer I mentioned and communities, a program that we call Health Links. And Health Links started in 2012 as this community-based program that would be community-led by employers saying, we are going to take a commitment to total worker health. And at the time, that was a very new, it was a new term in Colorado among the business community, because they were like calling it different things. That was one of the first things I realized. It was like, yeah, a lot of the businesses are actually talking about this in a different language. They're not calling it total worker health. They might be calling it wellness. They might be calling it safety. They might be calling it all this, combination of things. And instead of doing what we traditionally do in public health, which is to like work in our silos and with our theoretical models and build something and then like deliver it to the business community, we asked the business community, like, how are you talking about it? What are your priorities? What are the types of things? What are the motivations behind investing in the health, safety, and well-being of your workers? And then worked backwards from that to build out this model, which would be not only desirable among the business community, but it would be relevant to businesses, whether they were in construction, whether they're in education and service and hospitality industry. We wanted to have something that could be customized to how they operate. Because I think one of the biggest problems in our world is that we emphasize like the science so much, that then when by the time we translate it, it's not relevant anymore, or it doesn't fit into the ways that business has changed so rapidly, right? So this model we have for HealthLinks has been, you know, going strong for 10 years. We've worked with over 800 organizations of all shapes and sizes, with the end goal of having them adopt and implement total worker health in a way that actually works, is efficient and effective for them and has positive outcomes on the worker side. So it's been really exciting, and there's been a lot of course, unforeseen things that have come from it, like the engagement with the public health community to start thinking, okay, how we have all these programs like breastfeeding accommodation, you know, in local public health, maternal and child health is huge. And they're like, oh, you know how to talk to businesses. How do we talk to businesses about setting up, you know, their workplace to be more appropriate for nursing mothers who are working, you know, like simple things like that.
Right. Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so we've seen like all the public health things, the diabetes prevention, chronic disease prevention, everything fall under this umbrella of total worker health. And it's been really nice. We don't have all the, you know, haven't found all the answers because it's still really overwhelming to businesses. And so it's a fun place to be in with, you know, the ear of business and, well, the voice of business, I should say, and workers in their experience, and then on the occupational health and safety side, like what we know, and then trying to bring it all together into something that actually has impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. That is, that's good to hear. It's just really good to hear, because there are, again, in my experience, there are tons and tons and tons of programs and projects and activities that get together and talk about community impact, and they never really make any. they don't, because they talk to the same people about the same things and about their ideas, but they don't really go to the communities and the groups that they say they actually want to help. I find that most systems are perfectly designed to produce whatever they're currently producing. And our current system was not designed with total worker health as the priority. It was designed with profit as the priority. And I don't say that to be, you know, to throw rocks, but that's the reality, that many business enterprises start because someone wants to make money. And they kind of forget about the fact that once the making of money involves interacting with other human beings, that, that we have to consider how those other human beings are going to be affected by our attempt to make money. And the more we consider that, actually, the more money we'll make, because that money tends to come from other human beings. It's just an amazing kind of circle there, but the humans tend to get left out. And they also tend to get left out when we think greater than their physical health, but we think about their psychological and psychosocial health. So the definition of a psychosocial hazard, in my view, is, and again, based on my research, is a psychosocial hazard is a psychosocial factor that's perceived or experienced by the person exposed as a threat. And that threat motivates them to act in a particular way. And often in the workplace, in the community, in our exchanges with each other, we forget about the fact that, you know, a hazard, a psychosocial hazard, is in the mind of the other person. It's not what I intended. It's how they perceived it. So we set up a business, me and a bunch of other dudes set up a business, and none of us, you know, nursed babies. The babies were at home someplace. So we set it up that way, and we kind of forgot or didn't consider what would happen when someone came to the workplace who was different from us. And I think we all do that because we're all limited by our own experience. But then we make it worse when we don't involve or consider other people that we bring in. We say we want to be diverse and different and have all these wide range of talents, but the system is set up for a particular person with a particular set of talents because that's who designed it in the first place. And so again, back to your point about reaching out to business, not let's make this thing and then take it to business and tell them it's going to work for them. Why not have her? There's a book out there called Trust and Inspire. It's Stephen M. R. Covey suggests that we're going to do really great things. We don't do great things for people. We don't do great things to people. We do great things with people. So the involvement's really important.
And I think there's been a turning point. And I might be naive in my own silo, but we also have, I think there was a trend which we were able to leverage in Total Worker Health, which is when we saw major corporations that since the 80s have been investing and kind of drinking the wellness Kool-Aid, right? Because it was like the vendors started popping up, the wellness industry became like a multi-trillion dollar industry. And so they had the marketing dollars to like go sell wellness to these big companies. But then it was exactly that. It was like the fitness programs and the Biggest Loser challenges and all of these things. And it was so transactional that maybe there was something that stuck here and there, but they weren't doing it for the right reason. And they weren't really effective, right? There was like, it was like something they did and put on their website. And now that experience that you just described of like, oh, we should be as companies thinking about our consumers or our customers, what do they want? What do they think? So they were able to start doing that for profit first, which is like this understanding of where are we working? You know, it's a form of market research, and then actually flip the script and look inward and say, what's happening in our own workplace? Like, what do our people want? And how can we be a business that's not just for profit, but it's for profit, people, and the planet? Like the establishment, have you heard of B Corps corporations?
I've heard of them. I can't say I really understood what they were, but I've heard of them.
Well, that was a huge movement because this was like an legitimate, incorporation status for an organization to be within a certain tax bracket and receive benefits for meeting the mark across these different criteria of not just making money, but on measures for sustainability and for workforces. And so for the first time ever, you could see businesses go like, oh, it is a win-win. And we, in some cases, if you are thinking about it more in a human aspect, less in like vendor programming and more about what's the culture of our organization? Who's working for us? What do they want? What do they think? And that diversity piece, of course, is so important. And it's also, I think, been really interesting to see how it plays out in various businesses, because there's also such a benefit to having a tight-knit culture. I think of like firefighters. Right? Where predominantly still male, with the local fire teams I've worked with, definitely still majority male. And the culture, has a certain, characteristics that really define it. And it's so thinking about like, okay, what does happen when you bring more women in? What happens when you bring in a new chief that might have different standards or priorities around health and safety? Like, what happens then?
Do you need more psych health and safety in your life? Then head over to the FlourishDX Academy for several free on-demand e-learning courses. If you're an internal professional, follow FlourishDX on Eventbrite to register for any of our free fortnightly interactive webinars. Our flagship professional practice program is also exclusively available for internal professionals. The 12-week course blends theory, applied practice, and interaction with other professionals through live lectures and a monthly community of practice session. Find out more about all these learning opportunities or inquire about a bespoke in-house training at the FlourishDX Academy. www.45003.org. Now, back to this episode.
I can tell you in some situations it doesn't go well, but in others, it might go better. I spent, 3 decades of my life in the fire rescue service and came to understand that it was the least diverse publicly funded thing we do in the country. And that limitation also has now come home to roost because the organizations are finding it difficult to find additional high school educated white males who just want to be firefighters. They're finding people who have who are not white, not male, have great skills in education, have other things, other interests they bring to the table that aren't served by the old system. And again, none of that is said to be critical of those who were there, but it's a self-imposed limitation, and particularly for things and activities and projects and programs that are funded by public money. similar to our education systems, a lot of other systems, a lot of the, because of the way that our country came to exist and the history of all kinds of labor exploitation over the centuries, we have a lot of these systems, again, they were set up for a particular person to do. And generally that person was male. Generally that person was white. Generally that person was cisgender. It was this kind of quote unquote standard model. But we've left out so many people who do have A, lots of skill to bring, and B, also have money to spend. So it's a self-reinforcing limitation that has not caused us to be our absolute best. It's just kind of limited us. And again, this focus on the total health of the worker, not just parts of the worker, not do they have a strong back and joints that won't get damaged, but how do they feel about being here? How do they feel about this project, this effort, this thing that we're doing in the community? How do they feel about that? And I'm finding that as we focus there, we're going to get better quality other stuff.
Right? And I find it so fascinating that various like different versions of this conversation have been happening for decades, but in all different camps. And that's what I see Total Worker Health doing, is like saying, hey, we're all actually talking about this in slightly different ways and different times. Like, let's bring the conversation together and think about how this is, what's the context in an occupational health psychology thinking of it, a human resource management thinking of it, every component of what we're talking about, the benefits, the comp. And now you see companies hire for instead of like the chief operating officer, they're hiring for like chief people officers, and they're hiring for a chief health officer. And those are the exceptional, right? And then there are still businesses that are the small to mid-sized businesses that might be thinking about it, but at the end of the day, they're still trying to just operate. They're still faced with so many challenges financially, societally, like just in running a business, that they even if they like to do it, like it's their last priority because they just need to keep their doors open. And I think that's another issue, right?
It is.
Society has imposed.
Yes. And again, I go back to my earlier statement, though, about design, is that I believe that we should be having more conversations, both in business schools, in business incubators, in innovation hubs, whatever it is. Let's talk about how we create an environment so everyone who gets engaged feels safe. Let's start there. Because if everyone feels safe, not some people feel safe, but if everyone feels safe, not if they feel psychosocially, psychologically, emotionally safe, you're going to have less of all the other challenges that are going to affect your bottom line. If you only have a handful of workers, you can't afford for those folks to be off, with a broken leg or a broken spirit. And I'm, in some cases, I think the broken spirit is worse because the broken spirit will continue to come into the building, will continue to physically be present, but emotionally they're not there. And in some cases, they're actually, it gets so difficult and so toxic for them that they will be trying to, to sabotage the business itself to get back at the business for how they've been treated. So that is, again, it's my belief that, so in Maslow's hierarchy, just above breathing, eating, and sleeping is safety. And these conversations about, engagement and all of that won't work unless we get the safety piece fixed. You won't be able to recruit people that, because it doesn't look safe from the outside looking in, and you won't be able to retain people because it doesn't feel safe to stay. So what else is more important? And I don't think, of course, anything is other than creating a safe space for the human beings. The machines don't take much. A little oil and, a few bolts tightened down and they'll do fine. It's the humans. And it's how important it is. Yeah.
And it's the things you can't see, right? It's the invisible things. It's not the wires. It's not the ladders.
Right.
It's everything that you're going to experience when you step foot on the job site. And we all know that 90% of that is invisible. And so that's where our hierarchy of controls, has been since it was established, missing the mark, because it's included only those physical safety hazards, and the psychological hazards are things that we actually pay attention to when we think about patients, when we think about students. And so as an example, this is actually, one of your questions was about this research project that we've been working on for the last 2 years, just wrapped it. It was led by Dr. Courtney Welton Mitchell, who's an assistant professor in our Department of Environmental and Occupational Health, and Dr. Natalie Schwatka. And it was a project that was meant or around enhancing the mental health emergency preparedness for the school workforce. And I love this project because the whole premise is in looking at how we are preparing teachers to feel safe in their jobs during emergency preparedness plans and drills. Right. And there we have evidence. We know that these drills can be harmful to not just students that experience them, but also teachers. And obviously they can be beneficial in many ways. So our team worked with schools, elementary, middle, and high schools from a single school district in Colorado to train just about 500 school-based personnel and working with collaboration with safety and security team members and mental health staff. So Dr. Courtney Walton Mitchell, Dr. Natalie Schwaka hosted three-hour interactive training with professional development days with these teacher and staff using a very participatory approach. So asking them, like, what is your experience when you go through these drills? What are the types of things that you're most concerned about? What are your worries? How do you feel? And then developed a training curriculum from that based on the feedback of these teacher and staff. And are looking to expand on this now. And I think that if you think about, you know, all of us from the hospitals, the healthcare teams to construction, you know, teams to whoever it is, the way you said it was so just so human that when we get in, when we step foot on the job, how do we feel? And how does that feeling affect how we perform on the job? And it, and we know it does. Like when I'm having a bad day, like it affects everything I do, every conversation I have, you know, everything I don't do as a result of it. And so that's what's so cool about, you know, this conversation, right? Is that, we're having the conversation and we're seeing businesses, especially the ones that we're working with at the center and through HealthLinks, that are saying, we care about this. We don't really know, like, we might not know what to do or where to get started, but we care about it. And we want to understand better how we can be thinking about having those conversations, what policies we should be considering, and really at the end of the day, how we need to shift our culture so that we can be able to sustain these, you know, this evolution. Like, we're looking at like an evolution of work and what we do, right?
Absolutely. Again, this is just so exciting to know, because again, I've shared with other guests that when this podcast started, I was under the impression that there were very few people in the country who cared at all about this, who were doing anything. A lot of that had to do with my own lack of knowledge. I didn't know what a psychosocial hazard really was until I was, chapter 2 or 3 in my dissertation. I came to it from my experience being the target of bullying and, you know, being understanding what bullying in the workplace is. But what I came to understand is that bullying is simply the psychosocial hazard, or one of the psychosocial hazards we know a lot about, and that we should continue to swim upstream to find out how can we design systems, design workplaces, design even community spaces that are not psychosocial hazard free, because it's not possible, but at least understand that this hazard exists and here's what we're going to do about it when you get exposed. Because again, to your point, there are some hazards that you absolutely can eliminate in the workplace. You can, but this is not one of them, because it's about my perception and my view of what's going on, which may be different from yours. It doesn't make me a bad person, doesn't make it a bad environment either. It just means it could be threatening to me because of my life experience, because of all kinds of things. Now, how does the organization help me? First of all, how does the gathering help me? First, hearing that it's a threat to me and not discarding that, well, you're just X and you need to buck up and deal with it and get tougher. Well, no, actually, I don't. But also, once I'm exposed, if it get part of the job of being in customer service is being exposed to people who've had a bad day. It's the job. Part of the job of being in a healthcare system is you're going to have people that are going to die. Part of the job of being in education is you're going to come across students having all kinds of challenges. That's the job. So when you're exposed to that, now what do I do? How does the organization help me? How do you help me recover from that exposure? How do you minimize my, you know, the rapidity of that kind of exposure. What do we do? And that's what this whole discussion around psychological health and safety is about. It's thinking about that in a more holistic way. And again, simply not throwing your hands up and saying that's just the way it is. It doesn't have to be that way. It could be better. It can be better.
Well, it's a very realist way, because what you just described, because there's another school of thought on controlling and eliminating all of those hazards. And I think that's really critical to acknowledge that it's not possible. And it never will be, right? We don't live in a vacuum or a bubble. It's like, I joke about what, you know, I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. And it's like, you slowly start to see them. It's being exposed to more and more every single day. And it's terrifying. And you just like want to put them in the bubble, but there isn't such a thing. And I think that's really important for us as researchers and for us as total worker health professionals to acknowledge that identifying these hazards is important. And then the exposure, the dose of exposure, and then that experience of the individual in being able to mitigate and control for those. Treat them right with our, we will be treating them. I think we can't prevent them all. And that makes this complicated and also really interesting. And I think it's I think a lot of occupational safety and health professionals have gravitated to it because they see it, they get it, you get it. And then others, feel a little threatened by it because it's not as formulaic, and you know, you aren't able to like control for the hazard, and that's scary.
In my conversations with other occupational safety and health professionals, I'm sharing, yes, you actually can treat this like other hazards, but you have to recognize that eliminating is not an option for all of them. It's an option for some. It's just not an option for all. So, you know, again, that's why I really, and you mentioned a little bit before, you know, the NIOSH kind of approach to total worker health and that hierarchy of controls being a little bit different. The elimination and substitution is pretty common. It's that work redesign thing that gets a little difficult for people. We start talking about, why don't we just redesign this for the person that we brought into this environment? Perhaps we could do that. And again, at the end of the day, after we've done all that we can, we may have to simply encourage different behaviors on the part of the person. And some of those different behaviors may, and I say this from my kind of HR background, is sometimes we have to help people be successful doing something else because they're not going to be successful doing this. It's just not, it's not ever going to be a fit. We've done as much as we possibly can. So now how do we help them find that space and place that's going to be safe for them and not make that a failure? It's people are just different. That's all. Not everybody will work in higher ed. We don't have enough time to talk about all the different roles I've had. I think I've had about 37 or 38 of them last I counted, and they're both connected and they're different, and they take different. And I didn't fit in all of them. I didn't, and I can't expect every organization to simply change to fit me. A lot of that work I have to do myself. I have to realize what's important to me, what gives me peace and joy and happiness, and pursue that on my own and not simply jam myself into a community and go, well, how come you all won't change for me? Because it may not be possible. So anyway, as so enjoyed this conversation, I want to give you just a couple of minutes to leave any thoughts that, you know, that you think we haven't covered that are really important. And then, If you're willing to share, if folks want to get more information about the center and about you, how would they do that?
Oh, yeah. Let's kind of wrap you up with one thing I wanted to share with you, because it's newer at our center, and I think it provides a really good example of what we're seeing or how we're seeing employers conceptualize psychosocial safety in through the lens of supporting team members, individuals that are struggling with addiction. And so about a year and a half ago, we were approached by partners at another school-based or university-based initiative called the Colorado Consortium for Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention to engage with them on a Colorado recovery-friendly workplace initiative. And this has come out of the opioid crisis in our country. And the consortium has worked over a decade on trying to prevent and address the opioid epidemic in Colorado specifically. Obviously, we're aware of what's happening nationally with fentanyl really right now. So they approached us saying, again, like, we know you work with employers. How can you help us roll this out? And it's been amazing to see how many employers have an awareness about the role that they could play or they can play in supporting employees that are struggling with substance use disorder, anxiety, depression, mental health, and really looking at it, taking an upstream approach to prevention. And there's been a big engagement around this because of the mental health piece, of course, right? During COVID and after COVID, and we started to see substance use rates increase. So here's just like some crazy stats from our state. Like, one in every five Coloradans drinks alcohol excessively. Colorado has estimated a loss of $5 billion in economic costs due to excessive drinking. And the treatment side is, and recovery side is, a growing concern too, because a lot of people who are living in more rural communities don't have access to treatment and recovery services. So we started this program a year ago in partnership with so many different groups. And we have had a lot of engagement from the business community to step up and say, we care about this. We sharing stories about employees that have left without any awareness of what happened or didn't work out because they weren't performing on the job. And then turns out they are actually struggling with addiction and went to get treatment and recovery and came back into the workforce and was really an aha moment for these employers going, okay, we see that this is really important and it's something that we want to do to shape our culture, to be able to be a safe place for employees to disclose when they're struggling and to be able to set up the systems, right? The work design, like, how can we set this up so that if there's someone who needs to go and into recovery or seek treatment, they can, and they won't be shamed for it. They'll be able to come back to work and be supported in a community and in their job. And they're going to be in a safe place so that they won't be exposed to threats, shaming, and even exposure in some cases. So I think, you know, that's one example I wanted to share. And I just wanting to encourage in particular to continue this conversation because you're obviously so passionate and educated on a lot of different things. And I think you're such an amazing champion. You inspire me. So thank you so much. And on the center standpoint, we have a lot of different, I wanted to also mention, we have a lot of different total workhouse trainings and programs. And so you can go on our website, which I'm happy to share. Visit us at our LinkedIn page, which is CHWE on LinkedIn. And then, of course, I need to plug to join the Society for Total Worker Health. I just put on my big hat, big shoes as president. And I look forward to working with you on the society. So we're looking to build that community. And I just encourage listeners to join.
Absolutely. Oh, boy. Dr. Lily Tenney, this has been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure to share some time with you. Again, I too look forward to the opportunities to work with you and with the society to really, you know, see Total Worker Health become more than just a slogan for some, and to see it expand for those who know what it is already, and to see the workplace be a safer place for everyone. So thank you very much. If you're watching this episode on the Flourish DX YouTube page, please do like, subscribe, and share. Most folks listen to these podcast episodes, and sometimes they watch. So if you're watching, that'd be great. If you're watching or listening to the podcast for the first time, welcome. I hope something you've heard will bring you back in the future. Previous episodes of the podcast can be found at psychhealthandsafetyusa.com, and we also would invite you to become a part of the Psych Health and Safety USA movement by connecting to us on LinkedIn. We will look forward to our next episode and our next conversation on this topic on the next episode of the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. Thanks very much. Tune in each Friday for new episodes of the Psych Health and Safety USA podcast. If you have a story or know of one that needs to be told, reach out to us on LinkedIn or send an email to david@id2-solutions.com or go to the Flourish DX website at flourishdx.com. We'll see you next time.